what proportion of students, a percentage of students or young folks these days have access to a digital device, a screen that they control?
One very insightful study that I read not too long ago showed that over 43% of children 3 to 5 years old regularly interact with a mobile phone in a gaming or in a play environment. So, you know, you could extrapolate that to a wider demographic. But suffice it to say, certainly, you know, mobile as a device has put play experiences in the hands of a much younger demographic than ever before, and certainly has broadened the reach generally for the population at large.
In my younger days, I was enthralled by Pong and Pac-Man. But video games have come a long way. The future of play will include everything from NFTs to the metaverse. Stephen Davis was Executive Vice President and Chief Content Officer at Hasbro. He's here to talk with us about the future of technology and toys. Stephen, welcome to Life Meet Tech.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
I have to ask you this. You have one of the coolest jobs on the planet, creating the Transformer movies, Power Rangers, and how about the kids? How do they respond?
Well, listen, if we've done our job well, they respond with wonder. And that really is what, you know, we try to achieve. In the toy industry, it's about, you know, making kids and families really happy every day with the experiences that you're creating for them. So if you leave a child with a sense of wonder, and that child see something in themselves, in the characters that they're immersed with, then, you know, that's a good day.
Any one of these would have been an amazing project and a lot of fun to do. Let's say you take G.I. Joe, but then you have Transformers, you have Power Rangers, and My Little Pony. What is the creative process in taking something from a toy to something for the big screen?
The most successful content to commerce executions, taking a toy or a character and translating that to either the big screen or the small screen, first and foremost starts with great stories. My strategy has always been to try to identify top talent who really understand how to translate something physical into a much wider immersive experience represented either on the big screen, on your laptop, on your television set, in gaming, in whatever form or format you want to experience the stories that we want to tell. But it's also a multidisciplinary exercise. So obviously you start with, you know, great writers, but it's also important to have the toy creators in the room. It's important to have the individuals who are responsible for marketing or the merchandise in the room. It's important to have the digital teams in the room. Anyone who's going to ultimately touch what you are creating has something to say about what that bigger world, that bigger story world that you're creating should look like. So it's really a collaborative approach. At least the most successful execution has been collaborative in nature.
We've talked quite a bit about movies, but Hasbro is a company that makes toys for children. What can you tell us about the innovations, the changes that have occurred over the last 10, 20 years?
Well, look, not necessarily to speak about Hasbro specifically, but just generally in the industry, I think one of the most significant changes in our business has been the kind of digitalization of consumer products, which have made the ability to create more immersive experiences that a broader consumer base can access so much easier. You know, whether that be digital gaming, whether that be the metaverse, whether that be technology that allows a consumer to engage or interact with an action figure or a pony or a doll. The digitalization of our business has really been pretty revolutionary, I would say, over the last sort of 5 to 7 years.
Along with the digitization of games, there is also something called connected play. What are your thoughts on that, or what can you tell us about it?
So what I love about connected play, and I think perhaps one of the most significant influences on consumer behavior, is that you've created an experience for a consumer that allows them to see themselves in a character or in a play pattern in a much, much more dramatic way, because they are controlling what the play pattern experience is that they're having, as opposed to it being sort of dictated to them. Now, one of the things that's, of course, magical is a child's mind, and a child being able to create in their mind their own universe as they're engaging with a particular character, which, you know, might be an action figure, might be a doll. That can never be replaced. But this idea that they have greater control over the physical experience is something that connected play has created. And I think that what we're seeing, particularly, you know, in the metaverse, is that, and with VR and with AR and other virtual experiences, that as the toy industry continues to innovate and really push the envelope with respect to those technologies, you'll just see increasingly greater connected play experiences, greater engagement, which will frankly lead to significantly greater sales, because those are the kinds of experiences that we see consumers responding to.
This aspect of connectivity took a different turn during COVID, did it not? Where people...
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Well, listen, mom, dad, kids had a lot more time together, and they had a lot more disposable time. And I think what we saw during COVID is that there was a willingness to perhaps experience or experiment with play in a way that we hadn't seen before, because particularly for moms and dads who had younger kids, they were looking for increasing ways to occupy time. And so first of all, what we saw is that families were playing more games together, whether those were linear games or what we would call face-to-face games or digital games. They were looking for extensions of education in STEAM and STEM activities. And so in art projects, in construction, to some extent in outdoor play, we saw a significant increase. And I think what we're seeing through consumer insights is that a lot of that kind of family play experience will continue post-COVID, which is wonderful. What I think we also saw, though, was kids and families showing a willingness to perhaps play with other consumer products that they might not have necessarily thought to even try to discover. And a lot of that, again, was just going back to filling time. But, you know, kids who were accustomed to card play would migrate to digital. Conversely, kids who were spending a lot of time online were discovering more linear play in gaming. Kids were discovering outdoor play in a way that perhaps they wouldn't have experienced before, particularly with a generation that we now know is spending so much time online, so much time on social media, so much time in online gaming. Just getting out of the house was something that was not part of their regular routine. But COVID opened up that opportunity, whether they chose to do so themselves or because mom and dad encouraged them to. And so the experiences that they wouldn't necessarily have had before suddenly were an eye-opener, and they want to continue to engage in those activities. So, you know, it's my hope that that isn't a fad, that it's a trend. I think, you know, as I said earlier, early consumer insights indicate that it is likely a trend that will continue. But I certainly think it's a healthy trend, and one that I would hope would continue. I think it's incumbent upon us as makers of experiences to continue to innovate in that way so that we can hold the attention of kids and their families so that they will continue to want to pursue those activities, to buy those toys that facilitate those kinds of experiences.
Both experiences, such as the ones that you mentioned, as well as enjoyment, research suggests that there is something about savoring. Is there evidence that these kinds of games, the linear format, where things are not so fast-paced, that you're engaged in true human connection, albeit online, has a sense of savoring that is richer and deeper than the typical sort of connectivity and fast gameplay?
Sure, particularly because there has been a trend to a lot of solitary play, or even in, you know, digital gaming community play. But there's no substitute for face-to-face human collective community play, whether that's community play with your family, whether that's community play with your friends. And there is that kind of warmth and texture that's associated with sitting around a board game with three, four, five other people, whether family members or friends, that totally changes the dynamic of that play experience, as opposed to that experience that you might have online with 4, 5, 50, 100 people you don't know. And that's what gets me excited. I mean, listen, I'm all for innovation, and think of myself as someone who is constantly in pursuit of innovation. And oftentimes innovation is equated with kind of the new technology. But I actually think that that is kind of an aha moment for innovation in our business too. This idea that connected play actually also means that you're connecting with people in an environment, at home, in a park, at your friend's house, where you're together. And that changes the nature of play. And that, to me, is super exciting. That's why I said earlier, I hope that, you know, early consumer insights, which we're studying very closely, show that this is not a fad, that it is a trend. And, you know, it doesn't mean we're abandoning the digitalization of our business by any means, because we're not. But I think both can live sort of simultaneously, and a healthy business can be created out of both.
That's music to my ears, because I've been thinking a lot about this. And it seems to me that the power of human connection, however we do this, whatever technology we have, there is something beautiful about human connection, and we have to strive to preserve that as much as we can. Let me switch and ask about NFTs and crypto. We hear a lot about this. I assume it's going to have some impact on gaming as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. The crypto universe right now, the metaverse, is obviously being impacted in the same way that our general economy is being impacted. And I think that, you know, you're beginning to see a lot of the kind of early entrants, the early innovators in the space struggling to survive. Some are not surviving. Those that are surviving, I think, are, first of all, very IP-driven, meaning that they're brands that are somewhat recognizable. Those that either have well-known brands or are continuing to innovate so that it's not just, you know, creating an avatar that you can, you know, show your friends, or buying a piece of art that sits digitally on your wall, that, you know, there's much more of an interactive experience, will be those that I think are the real winners in the metaverse. And, you know, again, looking at it through a consumer products or a toy lens, the ability to create characters in the metaverse that can transform, take shape, give the owner some level of personalization, those are, I think, the metaverse experiences that will have a lasting trend and ultimately will be the survivors.
I'm going to ask you to help us out here, take more of a crypto for dummies kind of approach, and tell us, I'll give you an example, and perhaps you can help us understand what NFTs and crypto mean, particularly in this kind of context. Let's say I'm in the metaverse and I create an avatar, which is really cool and lots of people like it. And now I want to monetize that. Can you tell us how that could be an NFT? And then how does crypto come into this scenario?
So, you know, right now, the most significant way that you can monetize a non-fungible token is through the marketplace. So it's through secondary and tertiary sales of an initial asset, right? Whether that be a character or what have you. The ability to take that character into the metaverse that might be part of a larger platform that can, you know, live in a virtual world, which is then tokenized. Think of sort of the Roblox comparison, is another form of monetization. Right now, the ability to build upon a non-fungible token in the representation of a character is somewhat limited, but as technology advances and you have the ability to evolve a character and create a greater experience and create a virtual world around that, that's just around the corner. And we're beginning to see the major toy companies create toys that, in a connected way, will live both physically as well as digitally in the metaverse. You know, we're seeing more innovation now in this space in the last 2-3 years than we've seen in the last 10 years. So I think what you're going to see on the horizon are, you know, greater interactivity with characters in a metaverse that can be translated to all kinds of experiences, whether that's world building, whether that's gaming, whether that's just enhanced connected play. I think that, you know, there's no limit to what the platforms will allow us to do. It'll only be limited by the speed with which innovation occurs within those worlds. What I like about it, and which gets me excited, is this idea that, again, I can create on my own a much larger immersive experience for myself, and that those characters become more a reflection of me or who I want them to be, as opposed to just a static character or a static image. That to me is super exciting, because that is the ultimate opportunity for self-creativity.
Absolutely. One of the promises of the internet was access, the democratization of information and flattening things out, which it really has delivered in many ways. In terms of children, what are your thoughts on democratization of information, but also have games had a role to play in this vision?
I mean, listen, digital gaming certainly has put gaming experiences in the hands of kids in a much more significant way than ever before. The creator community that's come out of technology and innovation have allowed kids to not only experience games created by others, but games that they create that they can then share. This idea of community gaming is super interesting. If you think about what are some of the top of the funnel opportunities that the digitalization of our business has created, certainly its reach, and it's the ability, again, to experience play in a way that might be more limiting. And, you know, studies have been done about play in developing countries and how both social gaming as well as online gaming have change the culture of kids' play in a way that we've never seen before. In countries like India, for instance, where, you know, space is at a premium, multi-generational families live together, kids are not necessarily accustomed to playing indoors. A lot of play is outdoors. We're seeing increased community play by virtue of the fact that they are able to access games and other physical and digital experiences in a way that they've never been able to before. That's a change in cultural play that we've never seen before in certainly, you know, the past 25 years.
The movement from real world to the digital world and back, sometimes it's called fluid play. Mm-hmm. And as you think about the metaverse, how is that operationalized?
I think that it affords kids and consumers just a heightened creative experience. And I think that it sort of extends the physical experience potentially in new and exciting and kind of magical ways. So, you know, as we go back to one of your original questions about connected play and innovation, that's where I go back to this idea that where we can create experiences where a consumer feels as though they have greater control over that play experience, and that that is facilitated and enhanced by fluid play, then we have won. We've won the hearts and minds of that consumer, because that is ultimately the most immersive, engaging experience that, you know, one can create. And that can happen, obviously, at various levels of technological sophistication, depending upon age and demographic and geography. But that is the ultimate goal, creating great immersive experiences where kids can tell stories on their own as they interact with a character or a story in a way that is truly, fully a creative and immersive experience for themselves.
So increasingly, as robots become part of our life, and as robots are introduced and for children, potentially there is this affinity that children have for these kinds of interactive agents that can be very positive. At the same time, I can see potential where this could have, it could veer off course.
Speaking of robotics specifically, I think that there is a trend in toys to make toys more sentient, to make them more lifelike, to include features that allow those toys to evolve and become kind of a member of your family. You know, we're seeing that in a lot of the digital applications of toys today. And that's now becoming more reflective in a much more technologically oriented way in physical toys. Again, I start with the premise that one has to create these things responsibly. But the idea that the robotic technology, that AI, that machine and language learning can influence a play experience for a kid is super exciting to me.
What about games for boys and girls? There used to be this very clear distinction, but it appears to me that distinction is blurring to some extent.
Yeah, I think, listen, what we're now seeing is the elimination of the boy and the girl's aisle. If you go to a major big box retailer where you might have gone down the girl's aisle or gone down the boy's aisle, now you're seeing that there's a homogenization of the aisle, that you're seeing toys and experiences that are attractive to both boys and girls. I also think that there's a greater acceptance of the idea that definitionally girls play and boys play kind of don't exist anymore. You know, that's not to say that more girls will play with Barbie than boys will play with Barbie, or that more boys will play with G.I. Joe than girls will play with G.I. Joe. But I think that you're seeing increasingly a crossover. And that's because just culturally, there's a greater acceptance of this idea of the democratization of play, and that there should be no barriers to what a child's experiences should be as dictated by their gender.
As you look ahead to the future of games, what do you see?
I see virtual games with avatars, with AR, VR, AI significantly influencing the idea of the virtual and the linear world converging, much like, you know, we see in movies today where you're, you know, sitting around a table and characters are coming to life virtually. I think that we're months, if not very small handful of years away from seeing those kinds of experiences come to life. Only limited, by the way, around accessibility and cost. Much in the same way that I think eventually we will see greater penetration of virtual reality in the home when someone figures out how to make it more affordable and frankly easier to set up at home. We'll see greater penetration similarly when we figure out how to create, you know, those kind of digital physical experiences at home in gaming. We'll see greater penetration of those experiences. I think that this idea of enhanced connected play in the metaverse, where perhaps aided by some kind of a VR experience, but spending more physical time in a virtual world is very much on the horizon. And I think that that will revolutionize what we think of as traditional play. I do think that, you know, areas like arts and crafts, construction, educational play, where we saw significant sell-through during COVID, will open up all kinds of interesting innovation that big toy companies will have a reason now to invest and innovate more significantly in those areas than perhaps they had considered doing so before, which I think is super exciting too, because I think the expansion of linear play is still super, super important.
What advice would you have for parents on how they should nurture a healthy relationship between both screenplay as well as other forms of play with their children?
For me personally, as a parent, I think that the number one way that I can create a healthy environment of play for my kids is to experience that play with them, to create opportunities where we can interact together with whatever their desire may be, whether it's doll play, hair play, whether it's outside with water blasters, whether it's playing a simple card game, rather than that experience starting as a solitary experience, to make it a family experience. Obviously, there are lots of experiences that lend themselves to solitary play. And I'm a big believer in solitary play too, because kids need to have their alone time. They need to be able to ideate and create in their own minds, you know, one-on-one with their toys. But I think it really starts with a family or community experience and just continuing to reinforce that. That, I think, is the way to create the healthiest play environment that a parent can create.
Stephen, I have a very challenging question for you. If you could be any toy, what would you be?
Well, you know, as a kidult, I play with a lot of toys, so it's a tough question to answer. But I guess I would have to say Rainbow Dash from My Little Pony. I've always loved her energy, her optimism. I've always wanted to be able to fly. So, you know, in my own play pattern world, I think about myself flying. But I think first and foremost, it's that positive, always on the go, high energy attitude that Rainbow Dash has that I try to model for myself. Okay, Prabhu, I want to ask you a question since asking me all the questions. If you could be any toy in the world, what would that toy be?
This is a tough one. I was prepared to ask you the questions. Let me think. My favorite animated movie is Monsters, Inc. And I think I want to be Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Why do you want to be Sully from
Monsters, Inc.? I think Sully, to me, is very complex and comes to a great realization that it's not about strength and power, but it's about joy.
I love that answer.
Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on Life Meet Tech.
Thank you. This was really awesome. Appreciate it.
Life Meet Tech is presented by WKAR in association with Michigan State University. Executive producer, Melanie Paul. Audio engineer, Drew Hill. And hosted by me, Prabhu David. Please subscribe wherever you're listening right now so you don't miss an episode. And I'll see you next time on Life Meet Tech.